You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Now, T. Osborne Bell is a blind climber who last year scaled the equivalent height of the side of London's famous skyscraper, the Gherkin. And she's now planning on taking her climbing to the next level and hopefully competing in international tournaments for Team GB later this year. And she's here now to tell us all about it. Thank you very much for joining us, T. So let's go back to the start. You were diagnosed as severely sight impaired in 2008. So when did climbing appear? When did you get into climbing?
So a friend introduced me to climbing in about 2013, and it was just like an instant bug. I caught the bug and I was off, basically.
And what was it about it? Can you put your finger on what it was? Or is it...
You know, obviously with a sight impairment, team sports and things like that can be quite tricky. And I'd given up recently being able to cycle on my own, sort of, you know. So at a time when I felt like actually I was losing so much of those sort of sports that I could take and get involved in, climbing was just something that, you know, obviously you do it with a partner, you know, they're holding your rope and they're keeping you safe, but it's you on the wall. It's just purely you at that moment. And that really, it really gave me a sort of sense of achievement when, you know, whenever you get to the top of that next wall or you try a harder climb and you manage to pull it off, it was just like a bit of an adrenaline junkie moment, if that makes sense. But it was all down to me, and it was something that, you know, despite my sight, although I would, you know, occasionally I'd miss an easy hold because I hadn't missed, you know, I'd completely miss it with an arm sweep or something like that, and it wouldn't be till I get down on the ground later my climbing partner would go, you know, you had a really easy hold you could have got, and it's like, no, I just pulled off a different move completely. But it was all down to me, and it was just, yeah, it was really sort of exhilarating.
And how does it work then? Tell us a little bit about the accessibility of climbing. How does it work when you're actually on the wall and you're looking for where to put your hands and your feet?
Okay, so with my main climbing partner, we've worked in a system because he's terrible with his left and right. So we do the time on the clock as if it's a clock face. And he will say to me, you know, if it's within... He knows what my sort of arm reach is, but generally I climb with my feet first and then my arms sort of, you know, my feet follow my arms. So what he'll do is he'll say to me, oh, you've got a great hold out at, say, 2 o'clock. So, you know, I know that's a right hand. And once my hand goes there, then obviously the rest of your body moves up, but you don't pull yourself up the wall. You sort of use your feet to climb up higher first. You don't, you know, a lot of people think you pull yourself by your arms up the wall, and you don't so much. You actually climb with your legs. So if there's a particular like foot position that's better to get into, he'll say to me, you know, you've got a foothold at like mid thigh. So I know that I need to get my leg up to my mid thigh sort of height and then go from there. And we've just sort of got this system that worked for us. So we use like times on the clock hand for my hands as such. And then for my legs, he'll say, you know, like 6 o'clock, but it's about right thigh. So he can gauge my distance from the floor. He's quite good at that.
Just how important is that relationship then when you're on the wall? I mean, the level of trust.
Well, at the end of the day, he's holding the rope. If I come off that wall and he's not holding it properly, I'm coming down. So there is so much trust in that respect. You know, anyone who climbs knows how important it is for your belay, basically, to have your rope. So that if you do come off the wall, you know, you only move sort of a small amount. It's going to happen. It happens to everyone who do come off the wall, but you don't, you know, land on the floor. You only sort of move ever so slightly because obviously the rope has a certain amount of give in it. So I have a lot of trust in him, and yeah, I probably do rely on him obviously a lot more than most climbers would, because they would be using their sight. So sometimes I would literally be on the wall, and the thing is, you can't hang around. If you've got your hand on like this tiny pinch hold, you can't hang around there for hours. You need to move quickly. So you need that. I need that sort of sighted guidance to go, right, you quickly need to put your arm up at like 11 o'clock and you'll be on a much nicer hold.
So let's talk about some challenges then. Tell us about when you did the Gherkin. Was it last year?
No, I did the Gherkin in 2014. Obviously, I didn't climb the actual Gherkin because that's a big glass building in London. But we did it as a charity climb. So it was the equivalent height of the Gherkin. It turned out to be 18 climbs. We measured a wall that we climb at a cow shot. And it wasn't a technically difficult wall. It was just the height of the wall. It was a 14 metre high wall. And I think it was about 18 or 19 climbs. We had to do it repetitively.
And what was that like then, having to do that over and over and over again? That must have been such a physical challenge.
It was a physical challenge because, you know, once I'd climbed the wall twice, I knew exactly where the holds were. There was no tech. Like I said, it was, we picked the wall for easy. It's what you call a jug hold. So it's literally, you know, you can put your hand on it. You've got big hold. It's not like tiny pinches. So there was no technical climbing involved. It was more about getting the height and the repetitiveness. But yeah, probably after about the eighth or ninth climb, my hands had started to peel because holds aren't the softest of material. You know, they have to be quite rough to enable you to hold them better. So by the end of the climb, my fingers were taped up. I had blisters on my hands. My legs were like jelly. It was just, you know, we had a team supporting us sort of on the ground. And I'd get down from a climb and they'd be like, right, here, eat this, drink that, get ready to go again. And my climbing partner actually did it as well, but he did the climb. He did his part of the climb blindfolded because obviously he's fully sighted. So he did it blindfolded as well, just to give himself a bit of a challenge too. So we took it in turns of climbing the length of the wall, and we had another team that were actually just holding the ropes and belaying us, because then it saved us having to do the rope holding bits as well. We could just concentrate on the climb.
And that challenge hasn't put you off climbing, because you're gonna carry on and you're competing internationally. Is that correct?
I'm not competing internationally just yet, but that is my aim. So later this year, actually in July, there is what they call the Para Climbing Series, the BMC run it. So I've got a climbing competition coming up in Southampton. It's so nice to have one on home turf. And then there's one, I think, in Wales, and then another one in Edinburgh later in the year. And then the aim is obviously from those to be, you know, picked for the GB team. Obviously, they have GB coaches at these events. And I've taken part in these sorts of home competitions before, and they run it differently different years. So one year they would be watching you as you went through the different routes, and watched you across the whole series, across the several competitions. And then other years they've done it where it's been a one time, you know, you do all these competitions and then you get selected to do a final competition at the end. So I'm not quite sure on the format of it, because obviously with COVID, everything changed slightly. And I unfortunately, because I've got a shoulder injury at the moment, I missed the first competition. So I'm not quite sure of how the format is, but the plan is that, you know, my climbing will get up to that standard that I will then be competing with Team GB internationally.
Well, best of luck with that. We're really, really rooting for you. What advice would you give to someone who has sight loss and wants to give climbing a go, but is maybe a little bit worried or nervous about getting on the wall for the first time? What would you say to them?
Do it. Go with somebody that you trust. They don't necessarily have to be a climber. You know, reach out, contact the climbing wall first, make them aware of your sight issues, and they will be more than happy to help. And I did my first taste session. We did that exact thing. Obviously, my climbing partner, he'd been climbing for a long time before I started climbing. But we reached out to our local climbing centre, explained it to them, and they were like, okay, that's fine. We can, you know, you let us know how it is, what we can help you with, how we can help you, or if, you know, we can just make sure you're safe and you can get on and do it. But they were, I mean, it's something, like I said, it was one of them things that, because I can't see my feet anymore, heights are no longer an issue for me. So climbing just seemed like the perfect opportunity. It would be something I would never do, I think, if I was sighted, because if I realised how high I was, I definitely wouldn't be doing it. So it's one of those happy things that's come out of blindness, I suppose, for me. That's how I see it. It's one of the good things to come out of me losing my sight.
That's really great advice. Just go for it. Just do it, as Nike say. Is there anywhere we can follow you online and follow your journey with climbing in the future?
Yeah, I actually have my own blog. I'm a bit of a blogger. I write better than I talk, you see. And that is just seemyway.co.uk.
Great stuff. Well, Teresa, thank you very much for chatting with us today, and best of luck as the competitions come up.
Thank you.